House Bill 2, also known as the bathroom bill, required people in North Carolina to use the bathroom for the gender on their birth certificate. The original law cost North Carolina big bucks. Musicians canceled concerts. The NBA moved the 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte to New Orleans. And companies like PayPal yanked jobs, all part of a potential loss of $3.7 billion in business in North Carolina over the next 12 years.
European Council Chair Donald Tusk will present his proposed guidelines for Brexit talks, setting the EU's negotiating priorities for the two-year withdrawal process. The guidelines will aim to limit uncertainties for businesses and encourage a close future partnership. They are expected to be endorsed at an April 29 summit, paving the way for some of the most complex international talks ever undertaken.
Painting a bleak picture indeed is the Banking Association South Africa here. Two levels above non-investment grade is currently where South Africa stands. It may be a case of wait and see, because they have previously said that it doesn't matter who is the finance minister. It matters mostly what the policies are. And if those are still in place, then nothing really has changed.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday. It's March 31st, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, our last business day of the week, and really the last business day of the month. It will be April officially tomorrow, and we'll start it all over again. Glad to have you here for our Friday edition, though. Lots to talk about a little bit later on in the program. We'll be checking in with Rick Seney of FairCompare.com. More about the leggings incident earlier this week involving United Airlines. And also we'll try to find some cheap fares for you, maybe to get out of town if you're planning a spring trip somewhere. All that's coming up. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are looking for possibly a negative open on Wall Street later this morning, off about 37 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Crude oil is trading at $50.19 a barrel. It's off about a third this morning. Most global markets are also lower, dipping today as investors locked in some of the more than 6% gain that has given them their best start of the year since 2012, while the dollar inched toward what could be its strongest week of 2017 so far. Asian and European shares both saw some profit-taking as traders squared up for the quarter, though there was plenty still going on, not the least of which was in South Africa, where the finance minister was fired and then replaced. Asian stock markets mixed today. Again, the Tokyo Nikkei is up just a little bit, but it looks like, and China, Shanghai may be up as well a little bit. But most other markets in Asia are generally unchanged this morning. In Europe, the FTSE's off about 29 points, or about a half a percent. The DAX, CAC lower as well. Some news that's happening this morning. We're watching the White House today. President Trump will sign a pair of executive orders aimed at cracking down on trade abuses. The first calls for the completion of a large-scale report that will track trade deficits country by country and product by product. The second will focus on stepping up the collection of certain duties. Trump talked about trade on the campaign trail, vowing to renegotiate several major deals and to label China a currency manipulator on day one. Now his administration appears to be taking a more cautious approach to that. Economists argue job losses Trump blames on trade pacts can largely be attributed to automation and not jobs going to other countries. Also this morning, we're watching this story, too, involving the securities sanctuary cities and credit ratings. A major rating agency says if sanctuary communities that refuse to cooperate with immigration authorities lose federal funds under President Trump's executive order, their credit ratings are not likely to change. Standard & Poor's issued a report yesterday examining the financial health of more than 100 cities, like Chicago, and counties that call themselves sanctuary cities. S&P says if Trump were to follow through on the threat to withhold certain funds, credit ratings would likely remain largely unchanged, in their words. That's because the type of grants and questions don't make up a large part of municipality budgets. Lots of talk centering on federal officials, Federal Reserve officials, and interest rates. They've been out chatting that up in recent days. Let's bring in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. He's a senior portfolio manager there and talks to us about portfolios every Friday. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you again.
Good to have you on. Let's talk a little bit about this thing that's happening today at the White House. It seems just like an executive order to sort of get the bearings to move forward on trade and possibly implementing other things in the future. What is your take on it, and how do you see this impacting the markets, perhaps?
You know, I don't see a big impact right now in the markets. What's interesting, and you alluded to it earlier, is the fact that President Trump has backed away from a lot of the campaign rhetoric regarding China, regarding NAFTA, et cetera. So he has moved a little bit toward the center, albeit from the very far right. But it's going to take some time to see how this all unfolds and what the overall impact is going to be on trade. So it's a multi-year look-see as to the overall impact.
Yeah, one of those moderations is seems to be on NAFTA. We heard this week from the White House that they are, in their words, moderating the view on that. You think they're getting a little bit of pushback from Canada or maybe Mexico on that, or do you think they're realizing how hard it would be to sort of renegotiate that stuff?
Oh, it's going to be very difficult to renegotiate most all of that. And it's part of the reason why, from an investment perspective, Mexico and the Mexico market, as well as the peso, have actually done pretty well since the beginning of the year, in line with a lot of the international and emerging markets as far as investments go for U.S. citizens. So, again, the reaction from the election, we're seeing a lot of that unwind as we go through the first quarter.
Mexico, obviously one of those emerging markets. What are the investment opportunities there?
Well, I mean, we try not to pick specific companies and really not even specific countries, but we see emerging markets in general growth picking up. So GDP growth, not just in Mexico, but around the globe in emerging markets, after declining significantly over the last 5 or 6 years, has looked to be making a bottom in the last couple years and look to be picking up, on top of the fact that most of those markets are very inexpensive relative to the U.S. So you get two things working for you in the fact that you've got higher growth, lower overall valuation, and the wild card to it is really the dollar. And the dollar has, albeit very volatile, has been fairly stable around current levels over the last year or two, so you're not losing out to a stronger dollar.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Banks and other financial companies among the strongest gainers on the stock market. Increasing bond yields mean higher interest rates on loans and probably bigger profits for banks. Stock averages rose in the latest session, the Nasdaq posting another all-time high, gaining nearly 17 points. U.S. crude oil rose and is now back over $50 a barrel. A big boost for private enterprise in space. For the first time, SpaceX has successfully launched and then retrieved a recycled rocket. The mission blasted off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center, and it's part of the company's efforts to cut down costs and speed up flights. The Trump administration out with guidelines to Congress on renegotiating parts of NAFTA, the free trade deal with Canada and Mexico. The draft gives few details. For now, it looks like much of the current deal would stay in place. Volkswagen paying more than $157 million to 10 states to settle environmental lawsuits. Richard Davies, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. 522 here on our Friday edition of the show. And Paul Nolte is with us at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, a couple of the Fed folks are out talking. Even this morning, a new speech is coming out. It looks like they're not only firming up decisions, or at least in their own minds, on rate increases this year, maybe two or more. I've even heard three or four. So here we are talking about that again.
We are. And, you know, it's interesting when you listen to the discussions and some of the logic behind it. They cite inflation is picking up a little bit. They cite that economic growth has picked up employment. Certainly, we're seeing the weekly job or the monthly jobs numbers, and we'll get a new one next week in the 175,000 to 200,000 range. So I guess the way I would look at it is a car approaching a stoplight, that we're getting close to that target. So instead of keeping your foot on the gas, they're willing to put on the brakes here a little bit in advance of getting to those numbers. The bigger question is, really, are the economic numbers all that strong? and is the economy really in jeopardy of overheating? And that we're really not seeing in the data. So again, we're talking a good game right now, similar to what we did the beginning part of last year, and all of it unraveled by the time we got to December.
One of the questions is this notion of soft data versus hard data. We saw U.S. economic growth revised higher this week, consumers spending more, better corporate profits. Is that an example of hard data?
Yes, those would be examples of the hard data, and I think a lot of people look at the manufacturing sector as really hard data, so durable goods, manufacturing, et cetera. The soft data would be surveys. What are people saying? What are executives saying about the overall economy and their business? That tends to lead. When you take a look at 2008, 2009, the soft data, the surveys, and so on, were strengthening well ahead of the hard data. So I guess you look at it and say, you know, I think things are getting better. I'm going to make the investment in plant and equipment, and that tends to follow. So we'd like to see that continue to strengthen here. And I think that's some of the things that the Fed is looking at, in that everybody is saying things are getting better. Now they're starting to act on it, and we'll see it in the data, hopefully, by mid-year.
This is the end of the first quarter. In that quarter, we've had the inauguration of Donald Trump, lots of other things happening, too. And the stock market about to notch a sixth straight winning quarter, and that would be, what, the best since 2006?
Yeah, something like that. And here's the interesting part of it. It was one of the calmest quarters in decades. So on an average day, the S&P was changed by less than a third of a percent, and that's the smallest since the 1960s. And it had 15 days where it moved up or down less than one-tenth of 1% or 10 basis points. So, again, very calm, but directionally pretty much straight up all quarter. So, again, the politics and a lot of the stuff that we saw with Brexit, the Federal Reserve raising interest rates, a lot of that was background noise, and the markets continue to move on, anticipating better things going forward.
I've seen some estimates about the final number gain for the quarter, about 5% from the stock market. That's compared to 8% in the last quarter of 2016. Is it even fair to compare those two quarters?
You know, it is. Again, when you're taking a look at it, when we take a look at those returns, we like to look at year-over-year numbers. And certainly since the market bottomed in February of 16, the market has been on a very good run here as energy prices have picked up. And certainly that has also allowed economists and advisors and analysts to revise higher S&P earnings, which is really the engine that makes the markets go. So as long as those revisions stay up and companies come through with better earnings, and we'll see that starting mid-April, we could see the markets continue their slow trek higher the rest of the year.
End of quarter, stuff that we need to be thinking about with our portfolios?
You know, again, not much has changed from that perspective. We're still pretty concentrated within the U.S., but we do like the international markets. And bonds actually, even though the Fed has increased interest rates this quarter, the bond market actually did well and had a really pretty good quarter for itself. So, again, don't listen to a lot of the rhetoric out of Washington. Stay focused in on the financial markets. The two are not necessarily always intertwined.
Yeah, there's been a lot of ups and downs this week from Washington, and very little of it has really impacted the stock market.
Exactly. All so, right. Again, you know, earnings have a big impact on what stocks do and what your companies are doing. So better to stay focused there.
Paul, what do you got going on this weekend?
There's something going on. I'm doing a little bit of construction in my garage, but I'm trying to figure out what a cubit is right now with all the rain that we had. So I'm a little befuddled by the storms and a little concerned that we have a little too much rain.
Well, hopefully we'll dry out a little bit. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday.
Take care.
All right. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago with us, as he is every Friday, here on The Opening Bell.
From ABC News Tech Trends, a popular messaging app under fire from law enforcement
Officials in London say that the terrorists who carried out the recent attack outside the British House of Parliament sent messages using WhatsApp, but those messages can't be accessed because of the app's encryption technology. ABC legal analyst Dan Abrams explains.
It means that user one gets what's effectively a public key from WhatsApp to basically send a message that only user two can then open. And maybe just as importantly, WhatsApp would tell you even they can't see it.
Some have suggested creating a back door to give law enforcement access to these secret messages, pictures, and videos sent using the service.
WhatsApp would say, but that defeats the whole purpose of what we do. The minute you start creating a back door, anyone can use a back door.
In a statement, WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook, says it's horrified by what happened in London and it's cooperating with law enforcement. With Tech Trends, I'm Michelle Franz in ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program at 5:40 here on the Friday edition of The Opening Bell. This past week, United Airlines found itself in the crosshairs of social media after it prohibited two young teenage girls from boarding a flight wearing leggings. Never mind, they were flying under the company's employee family travel program, and that included a dress code. We thought we'd bring in Rick Cini this morning, founder and CEO of FairCompare.com in Dallas, to talk a little bit about this. Rick, first of all, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell on this Friday. Tell us a little bit about this situation. United really did take a hit on this, didn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I first saw it popping up on social media, and, you know, it looked like they were denying a paying passenger boarding. And just the word teenager, leggings, and denied boarding, I don't think should ever be in the same sentence, just generally. But, you know, there is a backstory. These are free tickets as an employee benefit. There is a different dress code for those tickets. In fact, I remember flying with a friend of mine back in the late 90s, and I was required to wear a suit and tie as part of the dress code on those free tickets. I think they've relaxed that a bit since the late 90s.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I remember flying with a friend from Midwest Express, and that was a suit and tie. You had to wear it, and you couldn't do it if you didn't. So did United get treated unfairly because of all this?
They probably did to some degree. Again, I think this is a general problem we've seen happen in the era of no empty middle seats. It's bad words on somebody's shirt. Are they too fat to fly? Are they too smelly to fly? Do they have the wrong clothing to fly? And when you turn gate agents and flight attendants into the judge and jury, they could actually take exactly the same person one day, have a bad day the next, and completely choose a different course or path. That's just a recipe for uneven application.
Is there another solution there?
I don't think there is, to be honest. Right, it's a set of rules, and everybody has to interpret them. I think, again, I sort of blame the parents in this case. They know what the rules are. They're the employees of the airline. They know exactly what the dress code is.
And this also just sort of shows the power of social media. You too, I believe it started with two well-known celebrities, or somewhat celebrities, tweeting about this, and before long it was viral globally.
Look, I have a 16-year-old, and I've gotten up the last two or three years every morning, and I'm not sure I've ever seen not leggings on one day. Yeah. So this to me seems common. In fact, I think I bought some Lululemon stock a year ago because I kept seeing that. So, I mean, that's when I first caught my eye. But then when they were on free tickets for employee benefits, then it became a little more clear.
United sort of tried to handle this professionally. I know the response they gave to us, a press statement, seemed to be professional. They went on and, you know, said, hey, if you're flying with us and you're a revenue flyer, you can wear leggings. It's not a big deal. And then Delta came out yesterday with a quick advertisement slamming United, saying, hey, on Delta, you can wear leggings.
Yeah, I know. That's a little piling on, in my opinion. They're well aware. They have the same sort of dress policy. The same that same person potentially on Delta could have made the same exact decision. So I think it's a little bit of piling on going on. But you know what? This is what happens in social media. You get a partial bit of the story. It catches on, and the rest of it has trouble catching up. And I think that's happens all the time in social media circles.
The Department of Transportation has released some new figures about 2016 air travel. What have they found?
Yeah, no, we're getting close to a billion passengers each year. That's pretty amazing. Around 930 million, up 35 million or so over the year before. That means probably within the next 18 months or so, we'll actually fly in a consecutive year almost a billion passengers. I think most people don't know this was an interesting fact, is that Southwest Airlines is actually the biggest domestic airline, carrying the most domestic passengers, American the most international, and by revenue, American is the biggest airline.
Where does United fall in there? And also, the airport rankings are out.
Yeah, they're neck and neck with Delta. I mean, essentially, you have three huge mega legacy airlines. Each one of them, when they had their mega mergers, when Delta merged with Northwest and United with Continental, they became the largest airline in the world. And then more recently, American, with their merger with U.S. Airways, became the largest airline in the world.
So Hartsfield-Jackson Airport in Atlanta is still the busiest airport. Why is that?
It's basically a huge, huge hub for Delta. Not only does it carry a bunch of domestic passengers in the southeast, it's also a huge hub for their European traffic as well, and also traffic that's going into Latin America, the Caribbean, a variety of other places. So essentially, if you look at sort of the other hub cities for Delta, including Cincinnati, not as much international traffic. They have a fairly large presence in New York, but essentially it's the main focal point in the southeastern United States, and that's why it has the most traffic.
People always ask me, why isn't O'Hare the busiest airport in the world anymore? Because it used to be. I don't really have a good answer for them why it's not back up there. Do you?
I think it also splits some of its traffic with Midway as well, where you don't have that in Atlanta. So you don't have a secondary airport in Atlanta where you're getting a bunch of domestic traffic. So you're basically, I think overall, if you looked at Chicago and you combine the two airports, it would actually be bigger than Atlanta.
So in some of these statistics, though, this surprised me. Kennedy Airport in New York handles the most international passengers.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that has to do is because of its nature as a business hub, and a lot of international travel between Europe, especially into the UK and a variety of other places. That's why you see that there. So there's a lot of originating traffic. And then because of what we've had happen over the last 6 or 7 years with this huge consolidation, essentially to get to Europe, you're going to connect in a big hub city, and essentially New York is that big hub. Now, there's lots of cities that have flights into Europe, but not as many as they do out of New York.
So let's look further into these figures. 928 million people flew last year on the airlines. It still strikes me that, you know, out of all those flights, it's still pretty safe, isn't it?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, literally, this getting out of bed this morning, I had a better chance of hurting myself than having anything happen in the sky. Really good record. Now, I will say that we have a lot of passengers, new aircraft coming in, but we need to fix some of the infrastructure that we have. We're still on an old radar, ground radar-based system from the late 70s and 80s for air traffic control. Europe, for example, has been on a satellite-based system for over a decade. In fact, almost a decade and a half. We need to be moving to that. We spent tens of billions of dollars on those projects. We just need to get those things finished up. It's 2017 now. Our phones have satellite technology in them. The plane should have it as well.
You know, the other thing, too, and I know President Trump has said this, others have said it, the airports are getting kind of dumpy looking, too. There used to be a time where these used to be the showcase places to go, and people used to dress up to fly. Not anymore.
No, that's true. And it's just like anything. If you're in a house for 20 years, everybody knows that after being in a house 15 or 20 years, it needs to be spruced up a bit. And the airlines really haven't had money really since 9/11 up until the last few years to actually support that. And even cities have had trouble because many times airports are a combination of both airlines and the city, founding fathers of the city, deciding whether or not that airport needs to be, you look at an airport, for example, like Las Vegas, where they're spending billions of dollars on the airport, and it's all about how much money they dump into it. So the good news is that the airlines do have money. They're spending billions of dollars to spruce up everything from uniforms to aircraft to airport experience. That's generally good for consumers, and I hope that continues on. I'd like to see it even be more spruced up.
So Rick, get us out of town. Where can we go cheaply?
Yeah, no, I was actually looking in May. I know a lot of people probably have already got their Easter and spring break stuff done. Look, the Northeast right now out of Chicago, you can get to Seattle, almost $300 round trip. Not a great price, but Portland just south of there, great place to visit, by the way, in late May, under $190 round trip. Great deal right there. You've got South Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale at $135, $140 round trip. You have Los Angeles at $130, $145 round trip. Again, in our Chicago has sort of perennially been the last 2 years. I think right now it's the third cheapest airport to fly out of in our list.
All right, Rick. Happy travels to you.
Thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com based out of Dallas. You can follow FareCompare at FareCompare and Rick Cini at Rick Cini for the very latest on good deals and travel and aviation news.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures looking for a weak open later when the opening bell rings on Wall Street, off now about 45 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures are weak as well this morning. Gold and silver are trading down. Crude oil also trading lower by about a half a percent at 50.04. a barrel. Most international markets are generally lower as well. Asian markets, Asian shares are mixed this morning. A couple of other stories that we're watching for you. Families applying for federal student aid are facing extra hurdles this year after a potential data breach led federal officials to remove an online tool that somehow smoothed the process. Federal officials say an online service known as the data retrieval tool will stay offline until the next application period. In the past, families could use the tool to import their tax information automatically to a complex form needed to obtain federal aid. Now families filling the form out have to fill out all of that tax information manually using old tax returns, an obstacle that could deter some families from filing. There is news from the world of Crayola this morning. Dandelion has gone to seed. Crayola is removing the color from all of its crayon boxes to make way for a new color that it plans to announce later today. This is National Crayon Day. Company announced Dandelion's departure via Twitter yesterday. This is only the third time in Crayola's long history that it has retired one or more colors, and the first time it is removing one from the box of 24. Other colors that now lie fallow include maize, raw umber, orange, yellow. Crayola crayons were produced starting in 1903 by the Binney and Smith Company. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday. It's March 31st, 2017. Only one major government economic report scheduled out today. The Commerce Department issues its February report on consumer spending, which accounts for roughly 70% of U.S. consumer activity. A couple of other things on our docket today. The CareerBuilder.com is out with a new survey today. It says half of Americans 60 or older feel that they can't retire until age 70 or won't be able to retire at all. On top of that, one-third of those 60 and older don't know how much to save for retirement. And this is out from Career Builder today. The White House will make financial closures, disclosures reports filed by high-level officials available to the public. And Stand for Rights, a benefit for the ACLU Live Telethon, will be produced by Friend of a Friend Productions and Funny or Die. It's later at 6 p.m. Chicago time, filmed in New York. The event will be streamed live on Facebook on Stand for Rights page. It includes appearances by Tina Fey, Tom Hanks, Alec Baldwin, and others. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Friday, March 31st.